Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, March 20th, 2021. I'll begin with the most recent local articles, and then as time allows, read local sports articles, a couple of feature columns, and then finally, again, if time allows, a few topical and interesting Texas-based articles that the Standard Times has published in the past week. San Angelo Man Charged with Injuring 7-Month-Old Baby by Elena Edgen, published March 23rd. A San Angelo man has been arrested months after a 7-month-old child was covered in bruises and had a broken rib, according to an arrest affidavit released Tuesday, March 23rd. Child Protective Services reported a 7-month-old child had been hit by a man multiple times. The injuries were on their face, head, abdomen, and right arm. On March 15th, Shannon Medical Center staff confirmed the baby had a broken posterior rib bone, which was healing, records state. The child's caretaker told officers she left the baby in a man's care from November 27th to the 28th, 2021, at a residence on East 14th Street. Later on November 28th, the man called her in a panicked state about the baby crying, according to the affidavit. When she arrived at the residence, he told her he hurt the baby during co-sleeping when he had night terrors. He said he swatted the child's face, stomach, and grabbed their arm, record state. In photos taken by the woman, investigators noted extensive bruising along the child's right elbow, forearm, and hand. Large oval bruise on the left side of their abdomen over the rib cage and stomach. Extensive bruising under the left eye and on the left cheek. Swollen lips with red marks around the mouth. Extensive dark bruising under the right eye and on the cheek. Extensive bruising around the forehead and right temple. Bruises on the left temple. Investigators met with the man who told them he used methamphetamine on November 26, 2021, and had still been under the influence when the baby was dropped off. In the early hours of November 28th, while co-sleeping, he started to come down from the methamphetamine high, and it was bad, according to the affidavit. He told investigators he smacked the expletive out of the baby, who started crying. In the interview, he also said he caused the baby's injuries during his drug-induced high, according to the affidavit. Jorge Alonso Rosendez, 33, was arrested Sunday on suspicion of intentional injury to a child and evading arrest detention with a vehicle. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $157,000 bond as of 3:30 p.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. Unacceptable. San Angelo mayor calls out Suddenlink. Company responds. By Elena Edgen, published March 22nd. After having its internet service called unacceptable by San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter last week, Suddenlink Communications has responded to the criticism. During a city council meeting, March 15th, Gunter took a few minutes to discuss a weekend internet outage in downtown and urged people to file for arbitration against Suddenlink if they're experiencing similar issues. The outage left numerous businesses unable to use their phones or card readers, Gunter said. Some have been without internet services for over 9 days, Gunter said. It's truly unacceptable. Gunter, who owns Miss Hattie's restaurant, described her business's struggle. From 4 p.m. March 11th through 6 p.m. March 14th, the phone lines and card readers were out. No one could call and make reservations, she said. I know there are many other individuals and businesses out there who went through the same thing that weekend. Ashwin Bhandari, head of communications for Altus, which owns Suddenlink, stated the weekend outage was part of an upgrade. While there were no widespread outages in San Angelo last week, we recently conducted a network upgrade, and a small number of customers may have experienced a service disruption during that period, Bhandari said in an emailed statement. During the March 15th meeting, Gunter encouraged residents to hold Suddenlink accountable. The city of San Angelo even has a page on its website that details the process of how to file a complaint and ultimately file for arbitration against the company. The page was created after a City of San Angelo survey in the summer of 2020 led to over 8,000 submissions from residents who were critical of Suddenlink's service. The service we are getting from Suddenlink is unacceptable, and I encourage all citizens to continue to work to make sure Suddenlink understands what poor service will cost them as a business, an individual, and as a city, she said. Her call to action comes just short of a month after Suddenlink announced an expansion in the city on February 16th. This includes adding a second retail location and fiber optic technology in the Concho Valley. Suddenlink is proud to serve our customers in San Angelo, and we strongly value the relationships that we have built in the community since entering the market, Bhandari said. We are committed to ensuring that all our customers in San Angelo and across Texas have a positive experience when they engage with us, and we are in the midst of investing significantly in the community by building a 100% fiber network and through the opening of a new retail store. When asked to address Gunter's concerns, Bhandari said the company would reach out to the city to keep the lines of communication open on those matters. Gunter stated a complaint has been filed with the Public Utilities Commission after the March 12th outage. I have spoken to Richard Saldana and Ronnie Fraustro with the Public Utilities Commission and communicated our community's frustration with Suddenlink service, not only last weekend, but over the past year, she said. She has also spoken with multiple people with Suddenlink's customer service, from local offices to New York and Arizona. They are fully aware of our frustrations, Gunter said. I will remain in contact with Suddenlink customer service employees. We deserve better, and I'll remain on top of the issue. I'm hopeful of better service. Trial begins for ex-San Angelo police chief accused of taking bribes, by Gabriel Monte, Lubbock Avalanche Journal, published March 21st. A federal prosecutor told jurors on Monday that the former police chief of San Angelo improperly used his influence to convince city councilors to award a $6 million contract to a radio communications company investigators believe paid him kickbacks through his Earth, Wind, and Fire cover band. Sean Long gave his opening statements to Tim R. Vasquez's trial after jurors were selected Monday morning at a federal court in Lubbock. Vasquez, San Angelo's police chief from 2004 to 2016, is charged with a count of receipt of a bribe by an agent of an organization receiving federal funds and three counts of honest services mail fraud. If convicted on all charges, Vasquez faces a maximum punishment of 70 years in prison and a $1 million fine and 3 years of supervised release. Long told jurors the evidence they have will show Vasquez used his position as police chief in 2015 to circumvent the bidding process by which city contracts are awarded and convince city officials to stick with its current provider of radio communication systems, San Antonio-based Daily Wells Communications, the licensed seller of L3 Harris radios. What the counselors didn't know, Long told jurors, was that Vasquez had a financial relationship with the company's band, Funky Monkey, which has performed at the company's corporate events since 2007, shortly after the company was first hired by the city to provide its radio communications system. Those systems were used by the city's agencies, including police and fire departments. Long said the evidence will show the company hired Vasquez because they knew he would be valuable to them in the future. He was uniquely positioned to advocate and influence the city council to award that contract, he said. Once the new contract was awarded in 2015, Long said Daily Wells hired Vasquez's band to play 10 shows for about $84,000 at the company's San Antonio headquarters. At the time, Funky Monkey's other performances earned them about $2,100 a show. Tim Vasquez never disclosed these payments to anyone, much less to the city council, he said. Long said he expected city councilors to testify they would not have approved the contract had they known about Vasquez's relationship with the company. The three counts of mail fraud relate to the checks the company mailed to Vasquez. When Texas Rangers began looking into Vasquez's relationship with the company, Daily Wells put Funky Monkey on retainer for about $50,000, Long said. Defense attorney David Gwynn told jurors the investigation into his client and his relationship with Daily Wells was blown out of proportion, saying the payments to Funky Monkey were legitimate. One didn't have anything to do with the other, he said. He said bands charge more for private functions, especially if it requires travel. Performances at local clubs, which are the venues Funky Monkey usually plays at, usually charge less and rely on the exposure from those events to book private performances. Apples aren't oranges. San Antonio is not San Angelo, Gwynn said. He told jurors he planned to call on experts in the music business in Texas to talk about the standard pricing for bands to travel and play in private functions such as weddings, anniversaries, and Christmas parties. You're going to learn more about music than you wanted to know, Gwynn said. He said his client began playing for the company in 2007 after Daily Wells president Richard Wells asked him to play at his anniversary when the band he initially hired fell through. Gwynn said Funky Monkey was suggested to Wells by Jeff Betty, who was a city attorney at the time. Gwynn said the radio system the city bought are used in other Texas cities, including Lubbock. They're excellent radios, he said. The first witness called by prosecutors was Bucky Hasty, the IT director for San Angelo, who led the project to keep Daily Wells as the city's radio system provider. Hasty said that in 2014, a Daily Wells representative approached him about upgrading the radio system, which was becoming outdated. He told jurors he preferred to stay with Daily Wells, saying the company offered good products and customer service. I didn't see any need to change, he said. The main selling point for the new system is that it would move the city's radio system from an exclusive EDACS protocol to the more widely used P25 Phase 2 protocol, he said. He told jurors that Vasquez was among the city officials he met with about the upgrade and said he was set on keeping Daily Wells as the provider and wanted to avoid the standard process of seeking bids from other companies. Jurors were shown emails Vasquez sent that showed his suggestion on how to circumvent the bidding process, including classifying the project as a public safety emergency or going through a cooperative purchasing program. Excerpts from the recorded San Angelo City Council meetings that discussed the project were played to jurors. In one meeting, council members were told they were going through Houston-Galveston Area Council Co-op to award Daily Wells the contract. The process added a 1.5% fee to the project. Shortly after the contract was awarded, Daily Wells sent the city a credit on the fee, saying it was erroneously billed to the city. However, prosecutors showed jurors documents that indicated HGAC was never involved in the process and had no records of the contract. The trial continues Tuesday. 2005 murder of Dyess Air Force Base airman by vet wife to be featured on ABC's 2020 by Elena Edgen, published March 23rd. In January 2005, Michael Severance was reported missing in San Angelo. After his body was found in a stock tank about 15 miles northwest of the city, An autopsy revealed he had large amounts of animal tranquilizers in his system. His wife, veterinarian Wendy Mae Davidson, was arrested and eventually found guilty of murder. She pleaded no contest to murder and two evidence tampering charges and was sentenced to 25 years in prison with two concurrent terms of 10 years each. Over a decade later, a new show by ABC News will explore the case with interviews from officials, family, and an in-prison interview with Davidson. The show, 2020, will air 8 p.m. Friday, March 25th on ABC, according to an ABC News release. It will be available the following day on Hulu. The show, in collaboration with Plum Pictures, will have ABC News chief national correspondent Mike Gutman interviewing Davidson on what she claims really happened to her husband, the release stated. Other interviews will include Severance's brother and father, Severance's friends, Ron Sanders, former Tom Green County Sheriff First Sergeant, Sean Palmer, retired Texas Ranger, Greg McCormick, a former special agent with Air Force OSI, Dr. Shredder Natarian, a former chief medical examiner in Lubbock County, Diane Fanning, author of A Poisoned Passion, which is about the murder. Wendy Davidson case timeline. January 14th and 15th, 2005. San Angelo veterinarian Wendy Mae Davidson, owner of Advanced Animal Care Clinic on Sherwood Way, poisons her husband, Dyess Air Force Base Staff Sergeant Michael Leslie Severance, with a mixture containing what authorities believe to be phenobarbital and pentobarbital, substances usually used to euthanize animals. January 16th, 2005. Davidson reports Severance as missing since the day before. Severance had been on leave until January 24th, at which time the Air Force begins investigating. March 5th, 2005. Police arrest Davidson on a charge of tampering with evidence, believing that she dumped her husband's body into a stock tank on the Tom Green County ranch of a family friend. March 6, 2005, investigators recover Severance's body, stabbed 41 times, and weighted down with more than 140 pounds of car parts and other items. April 15, 2005, police arrest Davidson on a second evidence tampering charge after altered records involving her clinic's use of potentially lethal drugs are found in a clinic trash can. May 24th, 2005. A Tom Green County grand jury indicts Davidson on one count of murder and two counts of tampering with evidence. October 2nd, 2006. Davidson pleads no contest to all three counts and is sentenced to 25 years in prison with two concurrent terms of 10 years each. The defense reserves the right to appeal Gossett's ruling on the motion to suppress. San Angelo Nature Center holding contest to name its new snake by Rosanna Frere, published March 21st. The San Angelo Nature Center is holding a contest to name its new snake. The albino Burmese python is somewhere between 5 to 7 years old and weighs 65 pounds, according to a release from the Nature Center. The person whose name is selected will receive a free family pass to the Nature Center for a year. Submit your name idea to cosatx.us/Nature Center. The Nature Center reported the death last month of its Burmese python baby, who was believed to have been about 25 years old. She was 17 feet long, 100 pounds, and a longtime favorite of visitors. San Angelo man dies in vehicle accident Friday on U.S. Highway 67 by Paul Harris, published March 19th. A 26-year-old San Angelo man died in a two-vehicle collision in the early morning hours of Friday, March 18th, according to a release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. The man was reportedly driving a 2015 Ford Focus northbound on the wrong side of the road on U.S. Highway 67, about 5 miles north of San Angelo, at 1:30 a.m. Friday. A 2012 Freightliner truck tractor, which was towing a trailer, collided with the Focus. The driver of the Freightliner was wearing a seatbelt and had non-incapacitating injuries. The driver of the Focus, identified as Luis Hernandez Serrano, was not wearing a seatbelt and was killed in the crash. Road conditions were dry and the weather was listed as clear cloudy. San Angelo boy, 16, dies from gunshot wound to chest, by Rosanna Frere and Elena Edgen, published March 18th. 3:33 p.m. Friday update. A 16-year-old boy who has not been named died after being shot in the chest on Thursday, according to a police news release. About 3:35 p.m. Thursday, March 17th, police arrived at a residence in the 900 block of Crenshaw Street. They found a 16-year-old who had been shot in the chest, according to the release. Officers started CPR, and the teen was taken to the hospital. He was pronounced deceased shortly after, according to the release. Investigators learned that juveniles in the area were handling a firearm, which led to the teen being shot. The incident is still under investigation, and no further information will be released at this time, the release stated. Now from the original story. A teen has been taken to the hospital after a shooting in a San Angelo downtown neighborhood. There's no suspects at large and the neighborhood is safe, said Sergeant Travis Griffith with SAPD. This is being investigated and it is a very fluid situation. About 3:32 p.m. Thursday, March 17th, police radio communications reported a child, 15, had been shot in the chest. Multiple first responders rushed to the 900 block of Crenshaw Street, including at least 6 police units and an ambulance. The injured person, who police did not confirm an age, was transported to the hospital. Police did not have an update on their condition as of 4:11 p.m. Thursday. SAPD's investigation division, along with other divisions, continued speaking with witnesses after the update. Griffith said they would be here for a long time. Former Ballinger ISD business office manager sentenced to prison for embezzlement, by Bill Hancock, published March 18th, Runnels County Register. 119th District Judge Ben Woodward handed down a guilty verdict and prison sentence for former Ballinger Independent School District business office manager Jana Hoffman on Thursday, March 17th. The former public servant was convicted of embezzling $213,987.79 from the school district through credit card abuse and fraudulent overtime. "This is all you. This is a particularly despicable crime," Woodward said as he handed down a sentence of 7 years in prison and $213,987.79 in restitution on the 7 felony convictions. The thefts and overtime fraud took place over a 7-year period. In all, the convictions on all 7 charges carried a sentence of 19 years, but will all be served concurrently. In addition to the theft cases, Hoffman received over $77,000 of fraudulent overtime pay. As an exempt school district employee, Hoffman was not entitled to overtime pay. The former employee was also ordered to pay $213,987.79 in restitution for the theft and overtime payroll fraud. One issue at the heart of the trial was the fact that the school district had filed a claim with their insurance company and received a $100,000 settlement. Hoffman's attorney, Tip Hargrove, felt that the insurance company was not the victim and that the district was not entitled to $100,000 in restitution. The defense attorney also argued against any prison time in his closing arguments, taking a 54-year-old woman with severe health problems and putting her in prison is retribution, not rehabilitation. Hargrove requested deferred adjudication, arguing that Hoffman was not a threat to the public, would likely never work in a position of trust again, and had health problems. He requested a sentence of 120 months deferred adjudication, rounded down to 110 months. Hargrove said that $75,000 in restitution could be paid over those 110 months, leaving a lump sum of around $39,000. His sentencing recommendation left out the $100,000 that the insurance company paid to the district. 119th District Attorney John Best disagreed with Hargrove in his closing arguments. "I do not see a problem with our restitution request. I can't see any sense in how someone could steal $214,000 and not have to pay it all back. It was 7 years of stealing. It's such a breach of trust with the people of the community." Ultimately, Woodward agreed with Best and chose the harsher punishment of prison time and full restitution. Reservations to be accepted soon for San Angelo Summer Camp and Municipal Pool Parties by Rosanna Frere, published March 18th. The City of San Angelo Recreation Department released updates Friday, March 18th regarding municipal pool reservations and Summer Camp 2022 registration. Municipal Pool. The municipal pool will begin taking pool reservations on Monday, May 2nd. Reservations must be made from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday in the recreation offices in Santa Fe Crossing, 702 South Chadburn Street. Private party rentals. Private parties may be reserved any day of the week. Time slots are 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. and 8:45 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. Some dates may be unavailable because of public events at the pool. Private parties cost 1 to 100 people, $250. 101 to 200 people, $350. 201 to 300 people, $450. 301 to 400 people, $550. A $100 deposit is required, plus the initial fee stated above. All fees are due when the reservations are made. Cancellation fees may apply. Semi-private party rentals. Semi-private parties, during which the pool remains open to the public, cost $20 per hour plus $3 per person. There is a two-hour minimum for semi-private parties. All fees are due when the reservation is made. Cancellation fees may apply. Summer Camp 2022. Reservations for the Recreation Department's Summer Camp program will be accepted beginning Monday, March 21st. The cost is $65 to cover the first week of camp and a $45 non-refundable registration fee. Reservations must be made from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, in the recreation offices in Santa Fe Crossing, 702 South Chadburn Street. Summer day camp is a fun way for children to stay active during the summertime, the city's news release stated. While at their campsites, campers will play various sports and board games, make arts and crafts, and engage in other fun activities. The gyms now have air conditioning. The camp is for kids ages 5 to 12. Locations: Southside Recreation Center, 2750 Ben Ficklin Road, and Carl Ray Johnson Recreation Center, 1103 North Forest Street. Camp dates: May 31st through August 5th, 2022. Camp times: 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Monday through Friday, excluding holidays. Here's what you need to know about the 2022 San Angelo Rodeo Carnival by Rosanna Frere, published March 18th. It's time for the long-awaited return of the San Angelo Rodeo's Western Shamrock Carnival. Here's what you need to know about this year's event. Admission to fairgrounds. Free with rodeo ticket or carnival super pass. Admission is also free on Mondays and Tuesdays. Daily admission prices: $8 for adults, $5 for children ages 2 to 11. Free for children under 2. When is the carnival open? The Western Shamrock Carnival will kick off Friday, April 1st and run through Sunday, April 17th. Along with the carnival, there will be food vendors at the fairgrounds, vendors inside the First Financial Pavilion, and live music at the Beer Barn. How much does the carnival cost? An all-you-can-ride carnival super pass is $100 for the duration of the carnival. This includes free admission to the fairgrounds at no additional charge. The carnival super pass is available through Sunday, April 17th at the Coliseum box office. Daily unlimited ride bands, $35 each during the week, Monday through Friday, and $50 on Saturdays, Sundays, and Good Friday. Gate admission is also required to purchase the daily band. Individual ride tickets, $1. Each ride requires 2 to 5 tickets. Magic Money. Magic Money is a cashless system that guests can use for the carnival, food, and other features. Brittany Kosick, senior manager of the Rodeo Association, said it's similar to systems at Mr. Gaddy's and Chuck E. Cheese. Food vendors, the train, etc. will only accept Magic Money. Vendors inside the First Financial Pavilion will accept cash or credit debit cards, but do not accept Magic Money. The Magic Money machines accept cash and card payments. The Magic Money cards people had last year can be used again this year if they kept them, and any funds remaining on the card at the closing of Rodeo last year will still be on the card, Kosick said. There will be kiosks where you load money, and they will dispense a card with the money on it to be used on carnival rides and food stands. There is also an app that can be downloaded to add more money to the card. If you send your kids to the carnival with someone else, you can see the usage and add more money as needed, Kosick said. It's very user-friendly. West Texas fires rage through multiple counties, prompt evacuations. Here's What We Know, by Elena Edgen, published March 18th. 4 fires have torn through multiple West Texas counties near San Angelo, which led to burned homes and evacuations. Moving into Friday, here's the latest on nearby wildfires. Chico Lane Fire, Reagan County. As of 12:31 p.m. Friday, this fire is 95% contained and reached 8,000 acres, according to the Texas Wildlife Incidents Response System. No injuries have been reported as of 11:45 a.m. National Weather Service Midland reported the fire had spread to Erie and Crockett counties. The smoke and dust along State Highway 137 and U.S. 67 reduced visibility, according to their Twitter. The Texas A&M Forest Service is investigating what caused the fire. Edmondson Fire, Sterling County. About 3:57 p.m. Friday, this fire is 100% contained and consumed 3,861 acres, according to the Texas Wildlife Incident Response System. The Sterling County Sheriff's Office mentioned the Sterling County Volunteer Fire Department, Glasscock County Fire Department, the Texas Forest Service, and numerous ranchers have helped to slow the fire. The Texas A&M Forest Service is investigating what caused the fire. They have not received reports as of 11:45 a.m. regarding injuries or structure losses. Cruz Gap Fire, Reynolds County. As of 1:28 a.m. Friday, the fire is 80% contained and has burned 7,500 acres, according to the Texas Wildlife Incident Response System. The Forest Service has been working on this fire since Monday, March 14th. It escaped containment yesterday due to high winds, said a Texas A&M Forest Service information officer. About 85 homes were threatened. About 3:30 p.m. Thursday, the Coleman Fire Department reported the fire broke containment on the eastern side near Farm to Market 2805. The fire stretched into Coleman County on Thursday, prompting an evacuation order for Glen Cove. The community of less than 50 people is west of Coleman near Hordes Creek Lake. Multiple homes have been lost, and crews are attempting to hold the fire from jumping the roadways. Red Cross has been contacted to assist with shelter operations, stated a post on the Coleman Fire Department's Facebook page on Thursday. The Forest Service had not received reports of structural losses as of 11:45 a.m. Friday. It also closed State Highway 153 west of Coleman to non-emergency personnel. The highway reopened around midnight, and the Coleman Fire Department stated residents could return, though they should remain aware. Oak Mott Fire, Brown County. The Texas A&M Forest Service has been working this fire as part of the Eastland Complex fires. As of 10:04 a.m. Friday, the fire is 30% contained and has reached 6,000 acres, according to the Texas Wildlife Incident Response System. This fire caused an evacuation order for Highway 183 from County Road 495 to County Road 436, east to County Road 135 in Comanche County. It included May and Rising Star. Information on damages and injuries were unavailable as of 11:45 a.m. as the Forest Service planned to do assessments on Friday. Despite cooler temperatures expected for the area over the weekend, high winds and low humidity will keep fire concerns high. Now moving to sports. Top athletes to watch at the 2022 San Angelo Relays by Amy McDaniel, published March 23rd. Here are some athletes to watch Friday and Saturday at the San Angelo Stadium during the 63rd annual San Angelo Relays. Jacob English, San Angelo Central. The junior has already tied the Bobcat record in the boys' high jump with a clearance of 6 feet 8 inches and is the defending San Angelo Relays champion. Maybe this is the year someone finally breaks out of the group of 6 school record-holding Bobcats, including O'Keith Witherspoon. Raven Ortiz, Central. The senior comes into the meet having won both the boys' long jump and triple jump at the West Texas Relays. He won both events last year at the San Angelo Relays. Cole McWilliams, Central. The senior, who has been a 4-year member of the boys' varsity track team, won the 200 meters at the West Texas Relays with a time of 22. Brandon Cruz, San Angelo Lakeview. The junior is the defending champion in the Division II boys' 300-meter hurdles. Derek Taylor, Lakeview. The junior has cleared 6-3 this year in the Division II boys' high jump and should contend for a medal, if not the title, after placing last year as a sophomore. McKenna McMillian, Central. The sophomore won the girls' pole vault title at the West Texas Relays with a PR of 10-0. Vaulters love competing at the San Angelo Relays because of the atmosphere and a favorable tailwind many years. Layla Young, Central. The senior is the defending champion in the Division III girls' shot put. Hunter O'Bannon, Sonora. The junior won gold medals for the home team in the boys' 800 and 300 hurdles at the Bronco Relays. Cameron Williams, Wall. The junior should contend for medals in both the Division IV girls' shot put and discus throw. She's also a member of the Lady Hawks 4-100 relay that recently ran 51.48 in winning the Bronco Relays in Sonora. Faith Quiroz, Ozona. The sophomore is the defending champion in the Division IV girls 100 and 200 and also ran on the Lady Lions gold medal 4-100 relay. Leslie Salas, San Angelo Cornerstone. The junior is a 3-time cross-country champion in TAPS Class 1A and won 3 gold medals in district events last year at the TAPS State Track Meet, shattering the record in the 3200. 63rd Annual San Angelo Relays, Friday and Saturday, San Angelo Stadium. Teams entered, boys, Division I, San Angelo Central, Midland Legacy, Wolforth Friendship, Abilene Cooper, Odessa Permian, Midland High, Del Rio, Killeen, Odessa High, Lubbock Coronado, Lubbock Monterey, Big Spring, El Paso Austin, Cedar Ridge, Abilene High, Forsan, El Paso Yesla, El Paso Andres. Division 2, San Angelo Lakeview, Sonora, Wall, Monahans, Greenwood, Great Creek, Andrews, Ozona, Alpine, Klondike, Crane, Fort Stockton, San Angelo Cornerstone, Pecos, Perryton, Dumas, Stanton, Ballinger, Lubbock Estacado, Central JV, Lakeview JV. Girls, Division 3. San Angelo Central, Midland Legacy, Warforth Friendship, Abilene Cooper, Lubbock Monterey, Odessa Permian, Del Rio, Lubbock Coronado, Killeen, Odessa High, El Paso Austin, Cedar Ridge, El Paso Andres, Abilene High, Midland High, El Paso Yesla, Round Rock. Division 4. San Angelo Lakeview, Sonora, Wall, Big Spring, Andrews, Great Creek, Pecos, Monahans, Ballinger, Greenwood, Lubbock Estacado, Crane, Alpine, Klondike, Fort Stockton, San Angelo Cornerstone, Perryton, Dumas, Stanton, Ozona, Brownfield, Central JV, Lakeview JV. Schedule. Friday, 1 p.m., Division 4 Pole Vault, Division 3 High Jump, Division 4 Triple Jump, Division 1 Long Jump, Division 1 Discus Throw, Division 3 Shot Put. 1 p.m., Running Prelims, 4 100-meter Relay, 100 Hurdles, 110 Hurdles, 100. 3:15 p.m., Division 2 Long Jump, Division 4 High Jump, Division 3 Pole Vault, Division 3 Triple Jump, Division 2 Discus Throw, Division 4 Shot Put. 3:15 p.m., Running Prelims, 4 200 Relay, 400, 300 Hurdles, 200, 4 400 Relay. Note, top 7 finishers and prelims advance to finals. There will be a rolling schedule. Saturday, 9:30 a.m., Division 1 Pole Vault, Division 2 Pole Vault. 10 a.m., 3200 Finals. 10:30 a.m., Division 2 High Jump, Division 2 Shot Put, Division 4 Discus Throw, Division 2 Long Jump, Division 1 Triple Jump. Noon, 4 100 Relay Finals. 12:20 p.m., 800, 2 Heat Final. 12:55 p.m., 100 Hurdles, 110 Hurdles Finals. 1 p.m., Division 1 High Jump, Division 1 Shot Put, Division 3 Discus Throw, Division 4 Long Jump, Division 2 Triple Jump. 1:10 p.m., 100 Finals. 1:30 p.m., 4 200 Relay Finals. 1:50 p.m., 400 Finals. 2:10 p.m., 300 Hurdles Finals. 2:30 p.m., 200 Finals. 2:45 p.m., 1600 Finals. 3:35 p.m., 4 400 Relay Finals. Softball. San Angelo Central drops 15-14 heartbreaker at Permian. By Charles Bryce, published March 23rd. The San Angelo Central High School softball team remained winless in District 2-6A after dropping a 15-14 decision on the road against Odessa Permian on Tuesday. Taylor Martin drove in 5 runs for Central, and Analicia Garcia drove in 3. Permian improved to 6-5 overall and 1-2 in district. Central dropped to 8-8 and 0-4. The Lady Cats led 8-3 after 4 innings, but Permian got within 9-7 after 5. Central was up 13-7 in the top half of the 6th before Permian scored 6 runs in the bottom half of the frame to tie things up at 13-13. The Lady Cats regained the lead at 14-13 in the top of the 7th before the Lady Panthers retaliated with 2 runs in their final at-bat to pull out the squeaker. Central had 17 hits and 3 errors, and Permian had 15 hits and 4 defensive miscues. The Lady Cats will host Midland Legacy at 6:30 p.m. Friday at the Central Softball Complex. Sweetwater 15, Lakeview 1. The Lakeview Maidens opened District 3-4A play with a loss on the road against Sweetwater. Sweetwater improved to 12-7 overall and 1-0 in district. Lakeview dropped to 6-14-1 and 0-1. Lakeview will host Big Spring at 5 p.m. Friday at Maidens Field. Baseball. Lakeview drops district home game against Levelland by Charles Bryce. Published March 23rd. The Lakeview High School baseball team dropped a 6-3 decision against Levelland in a District 3-4A contest Tuesday night at Lakeview Field. Levelland improved to 9-10 overall and 2-2 in district. Lakeview dropped to 8-4 and 2-2. The Chiefs were leading 2-0 after the first inning before the Lobos pushed a run across in the second, third, and fourth to take a 3-2 advantage. Levelland added three more in the sixth, and Lakeview scored one in the bottom of the frame for the final margin. The Lobos finished with six hits, and Lakeview had four. Levelland struggled defensively with six errors, compared to just one for Lakeview. Lakeview is scheduled to host Snyder in another 3-4A matchup at 7 p.m. Friday. And now we'll move on to a few Texas-related articles. Gas prices may be painful, but analysts say they are boosting energy production in Texas. Texas is boosting its already record-setting oil production, but it's likely not enough to bring down the price of gasoline. By John C. Moritz, Corpus Christi Caller-Times, published March 23rd, Austin. Texas drivers can expect to pay upward of $4 a gallon for gas, but an upside, analysts say, might be that the high prices might supercharge the state's already booming energy industry. The Permian Basin has already exceeded its record production in both Texas and New Mexico, said Jason Modlin, president of the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers. Production in the Permian Basin, considered the driver for the nation's resurgence in the oil and gas sector, was riding an 18-year wave of steadily increasing in output until the COVID-19 outbreak in 2020 slammed on the brakes. But after a year of recovery, it has now topped the 5 million barrel a day mark. Now, the ban on imports of Russian oil, imposed after that nation's invasion of Ukraine, is straining national supplies, leading to the head-spinning spiral of gasoline prices at the pump. A year ago, the average price of regular unleaded gas in Texas was around $2.40 a gallon, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. During the week that ended March 14th this year, it was just pennies away from $4. If you're asking if it's going to stay that high, I'm afraid the answer to that question is yes, said Carl Ingham, a Texas petroleum economist who analyzes trends in the oil and gas sector. And by the way, it'll suit me just fine if I'm wrong about this. Ingham said many of the pieces for higher retail prices were being put in place even before the Russian invasion. The post-COVID recovery across nearly all sectors of the Texas and U.S. economies meant more goods being shipped to market by cars and trucks, he said. Plus, people were taking advantage of the renewed opportunities to drive, both around town and for longer excursions. Last week, facing the political fallout of spiking inflation, President Joe Biden took to Twitter to chastise the energy industry for the high cost of gasoline. Oil prices are decreasing. Gas prices should too. Last time oil was $96 a barrel, gas was $3.62 a gallon. Now it's $4.31, Biden tweeted, referring to the average national price at the time. Oil and gas companies shouldn't pad their profits at the expense of hardworking Americans. Modlin and others in the Texas oil and gas sector faulted the Biden administration for what they see as hostility toward traditional energy sources, which they said serves to hinder robust production from the wellhead to the gas pumps. There's just a lot of mixed messaging out of the White House, Modlin said. They want to see domestic production ramp up. Part of that is we need more pipelines and we need more refining capacity. Todd Staples, who leads the Texas Oil and Gas Association, said in an op-ed published in several Texas newspapers this week that Biden signaled his antipathy to the industry during his 2020 campaign for the presidency when he said the nation should wean itself from fossil fuels. Expanding oil and natural gas production and transportation requires foresight, planning, and investment that are rooted in certainty, Staples wrote. Securing permits and permission to access rights of way can take years, longer still with an administration intent on obstructing development. Since Biden's tweet, retail prices have fallen, but only slightly. We are experiencing a decline, but I don't know that it's a trend at this point, said Daniel Armbruster, a spokesman for AAA in Texas, who cited the continuing violence in Ukraine. The Automobile Association said Texans are paying about 30 cents a gallon below the national average for gasoline, which on Monday was $4.24. And Armbruster said AAA also found in a recent survey that many drivers are responding to the high price by curtailing discretionary trips by car. But any changes in driving habits are unlikely to last, and that could force gas prices back up, he said. We're in a period where we typically will start seeing gas prices go up in April, he said, and there's two reasons for that. Usually we see an increase in demand because more people are traveling. Spring travel season starts in March, and then of course you see more demand for gas as the weather gets warmer. Modlin said the best strategy for taming the price is to ramp up domestic production, even if it won't fully replace the oil that would have come from Russia, which before the invasion accounted for about 8% of the nation's supply. Certainly there are opportunities in North America to ramp up to meet some of that demand, he said. Ingham said Texas is best positioned to lead the way. The Permian is going to provide that response, he said. Permian production levels are growing faster than Texas production. Texas production statewide is growing faster than the national production. I'm relatively optimistic that we're going to get this, Ingham said. But is that going to replace Russia's 10 or 11 million barrels a day of production? Absolutely not. And this is why I'm not so optimistic that we're going to get significant gasoline price relief anytime soon. Analysis: A Healthcare Problem Too Big for the Texas Legislature, by Ross Ramsey, Texas Tribune, published March 21st. Texas has more uninsured people than any other state, whether you count in raw numbers, about 5.4 million, or in the uninsured percentage of the total population, 18.4%. But it's one of only a dozen states that hasn't expanded its Medicaid program. Whether lawmakers suddenly change their mind about the program or not, they still have a problem to solve. How do they get health insurance or cheaper health care for all of these people? Every 2 years, somebody in the Texas legislature attempts to get the state to expand its Medicaid program. Democrats have tried it. Republicans have tried it. But every year, the legislature turns a collective deaf ear to the efforts. Texans in Congress even tried going around the state government to get it done, to no avail. Expansion comes with a 9-to-1 match, meaning the federal government spends $9 for every $1 the state contributes. And states that take part have lower numbers and rates of uninsured people. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 8.9% of adults were uninsured in 2020 in states that had expanded Medicaid. In the states that hadn't, including Texas, the uninsured rate was 17.6%. In 2019, 18.4% of Texans were uninsured, according to the state comptroller's office. That was the highest rate in the country and double the national average of 9.2%. When the numbers are limited to just those Texans under age 65, who aren't eligible for Medicare, for instance, the percentage of uninsured in the state swells to 20.8%. Before the 2021 legislative session, a group of experts urging the state to join the federal program argued that doing so would contribute $75 million to $125 million to the state budget every 2 years. It would also, they argued, reduce uncompensated care in hospitals and emergency rooms and would encourage preventative care, early detection, and improve disease management. In addition, the infusion of billions of external dollars into the Texas healthcare system each year will have downstream positive effects on the economy, they wrote. Expanding Medicaid isn't the only way to solve the problem, but the state isn't doing much else to try to cut into the number of Texans who don't have insurance. One argument over the years is that uninsured Texans can get care in emergency rooms and hospitals. A common counterargument is that insuring more people would be cheaper in the long run and better for their health, and Texans have to pay either way. The bills for that so-called uncompensated care are footed by other patients and taxpayers who pay for those medical facilities and the care they provide through their own medical bills and local hospital taxes. And according to the people who study these things, expanding Medicaid would be a better deal for taxpayers. We estimate that 954,000 newly eligible adults would enroll in an expansion, bringing approximately $5.41 billion in federal dollars annually to the state, they wrote. Other conservative states were initially against expanding Medicaid too, but that resistance has thawed over the years. Now only a dozen states, including Texas, continue to opt out. During last year's regular session, as in the procession of sessions before it, Texas lawmakers voted it down. So no Medicaid expansion for Texas, a familiar result every time lawmakers have considered it through the last three presidencies. But it's just a program. One possible solution to a perplexing public policy predicament that remains unsolved and apparently beyond the abilities of the Texas state government. Almost one in five Texans don't have health insurance, the worst numbers in the country, and we've been at the bottom of that barrel for a long, long time. And now here is, finally, the weekly column by Allison Watkins. Advice for watering plants in West Texas when it won't rain. Published March 19th. It's been dreadfully dry so far this year, and no matter how well we irrigate, we just can't replace a rainfall. But some perennials are starting to emerge with new growth, and the ground is dry, so they need some irrigation until we get some spring rains. Since water is such a precious resource, be efficient and careful with how it's used. Good watering practices not only save water and money, but also promote deeper rooted plants that are more drought tolerant and can survive summer heat. Plants that have deep roots have access to more water than shallow rooted plants and will perform better and look more attractive when it gets hot and dry than plants that get watered too frequently. A good general rule of thumb for watering plants is deep but infrequent. This means to water thoroughly when needed so that water is pushed deep into the soil, but don't water too often. Wait until the plants really need more. For lawns, about 1 inch of water applied one day per week is adequate in the summer. In the cooler spring and fall, apply the 1 inch of water less often, every 2 to 3 weeks. Some other practices to implement to promote a healthy and drought-tolerant landscape include generous use of mulch, drip irrigation instead of spray irrigation, utilizing more efficient spray irrigation for turf, rainwater harvesting, good plant selection, landscape planning with zoning and grouping of plants with similar water needs, and good soil management with the incorporation of compost before planting. Mulch provides incredible benefits when it is applied correctly, compared to no mulch. Besides conserving water by preventing it from evaporating from the soil, organic mulch also moderates soil temperature, provides rich organic matter to the soil as it breaks down, controls weeds, improves water holding capacity of soil, and reduces erosion. A colleague once said, "Sprinklers don't waste water, people do." Whatever the method used, whether hand watering with a hose or utilizing drip tubing or spray heads, water can be wasted if the system is poorly designed and maintained. Don't let automatic sprinklers run during or after rainfall. And don't let drip irrigation fall into disrepair with leaks and other problems. Well-functioning irrigation helps plants stay healthy, protects our water resources, and saves money on the water bill. Don't miss the annual Concho Valley Master Gardeners Plant Sale, Saturday, April 2nd at 8 a.m. Keep an eye on https://txmg.org/Concho Valley for announcements and updates. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.